Welcome to another edition of the Week Den Update. I'm your host, Will Walker, and I'm joined every week by John Kraft. How's it going, John?
It's going well. Very exciting. I think it's regular season NBA, and we got three really exciting games. It was a really fun week of NBA basketball, so I'm excited to talk about it.
The Grizzlies are 9-4. That is good for tied for second in the Western Conference. I had to update this record here in standings with the latest development as Portland and Utah both lost tonight. The Grizzlies are tied for fourth in the NBA. Their offensive rating is 114.8, which is the exact same offensive rating as last week, and but they went up two spots, so they're fifth in the NBA there. Defensive rating, 113.2. They are 23rd in the NBA, so they went down one spot, actually, from last week there, and their net rating is 1.6, which is good for 13th in the NBA. They went down three spots in net rating, actually. And their point differential, according to Cleaning the Glass, is 3.7 so far this season, which is good for 6th in the NBA. We are going to talk about the games that happened last week. We're going to talk about the games that are upcoming this week. But first, we're going to start with the news. John, you want to start us off?
Yeah, so I'll start us off. So on 11/10/22, which is kind of a funny story, Desmond Bane was fined $15K for kicking a ball into the stands of the Celtics game. And I was actually there when I saw it. I kind of gasped, and my friend James, who's with me, was like wondering why. And it's because I know that if you throw the ball in the stands, refs can throw you out. And I was very nervous. I could tell it was sort of like one of those that ran into his foot, but he also very much looked like he was kind of kicking it in frustration. So it's one of those that the refs didn't see it, but then the NBA saw it and fined him $15,000. But it is something. I hope that was a fun way of learning. I mean, not a fun way, but a less bad way of learning his lesson. Because next time he does that, I bet he gets kicked out of the game.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because if you watch the replay back, I think you can actually do some dissection of angles and velocity, because it was off the scorer's table. It looked as if he's jogging off nonchalantly. It kind of hits his foot. He does a slight, ever so slight kind of movement of his foot outward, and the ball just like rockets off a lot faster than I would have thought it would based on what it looks like. And so his body language after it happened wasn't one of like, oh, I didn't mean to do that. He kind of walked away in frustration. Granted, it was in the last minute of the game. Things were in flux for a bit there, and they didn't end up going the Grizzlies' way. And so I'm sure there was at least some level of intent behind it. But I'm sitting here today saying you could make the argument, or Desmond Bane could, in a court of law, that, yeah, you know, there was maybe something not quite intentional about it. But at the end of the day, he did what he did, and the NBA had to find him. And so that's where we are. So we talked about this a little bit on the main Grizzden pod a couple nights ago, but the Grizzlies released the City Edition uniforms. I will start by saying my review was harsh, and as we processed and talked it out, it was more to me, it became clear both to me and to the listeners that it was less about, I would say, the object of the uniforms and more about my expectations of what the Grizzlies have, their branding has been and their creativity in the past. And so I'm basically holding them to a very high standard, and it didn't meet my standard. Some people say that they were better in person. I actually didn't have that experience. I actually found a couple more details that I didn't love about them. But John, before I talk any more about this, because we already went for 15 minutes on the last pod,
yes,
I'm going to give
y'all
you
did.
The
y'all want to? No, I couldn't believe y'all are such haters on the podcast. So I will say, I mean, I definitely always make fun of the fact that I'm not a fashion person. So the fact that that I like them more than the rest of y'all is probably is not good for the uniforms. But I'll say at the game, I was shocked how quickly there were already a lot of people wearing the uniforms, wearing that style in the stands. And so I liked it because I think it's Memphis. I agree with you. It's not as good as the Stax uniforms and some other ones we've had, but I still like it. I like what they tried. And honestly, for me, it's always, how are they compared to the rest of the league? And, you know, I know Brantley talked about it. It was a CBS one that already ranked us number one. You see on Twitter people praising that, man, Memphis just understands, you know, their team and their city so well compared to our teams. So in that sense, I'm happy.
Yeah. We don't have to say much more about it, except for the numbers on the back are very big. I wish they were a little bit smaller.
I will say I thought in person, I thought the uniforms looked really cool. That was the only thing that was a little weird to me, is how the numbers looked on the back.
All right, I'm going to take this next one, and then I'll let you finish this out with our last one. But Danny Green said on his podcast a couple days ago that he could see himself in Memphis for a couple more years if the Grizz would allow it. We spent a lot of time talking about the media side of things and, you know, our thoughts on what that could lead to, because he said he's, you know, planning on having some Grizzlies players on to the podcast. And so we had a lot of discussion in that realm, but we didn't quite get to the actual player in Danny Green and the decision that the Grizzlies will have to make on whether they actually would want to extend a player like Danny Green. And I wish we would have talked about it a little bit more, but now we have the opportunity here right now. And personally, you know, I was thinking about Green and how at his age, you know, he's getting up there. He plays a similar position to a lot of guys that we recently drafted. And my question is, one of the holes that we've seen when with Jaren out and now having, you know, a game against Boston where we also didn't have our other big available, you could see a hole there where we needed, in my opinion, at least a bigger body to fill. And I wish we would have had that on our roster going in. And I would venture to say that a Danny Green coming off an ACL tear might not be the best use of a roster spot. Now, who knows? He could look really good. We could hold on to him past the trade deadline, and he could have some playoff moments, and he could also be a really good vet, and that's important to have around. But in the maturation of this team that I believe is happening very quickly, I don't know if we can even afford a roster spot for, let's say, a vet presence when our team is starting to grow before our eyes and have so much experience in basketball years, if you will. But John, do you have any thoughts on either the media side or the basketball side with Danny Green?
Yeah, so quickly to add to your point, I mean, I think I agree with you. I mean, we'll see. I still think of him as a tradable contract until the trade deadline, and then we'll see. I mean, he's old, and he's coming off an ACL, and I agree with you. Having a third big, or, you know, basically trading out maybe a Tillman and Danny Green's contract for an upgrade for a third big is something that I could see us doing, because I do think that even with Jaren, you know, when Steven Adams is out, I just think it's nice, depending on the teams you're playing, to have another big, like a 7 foot tall person. And so, yeah, I agree. I would be very I would be very surprised if we were to re-sign him. I would feel like if we did that, then that means some other moves happened.
Yeah, so, agreed.
And then as far as
go ahead,
yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say the Tillman spot is the one too that like you could theoretically, you know, upgrade that and use that roster spot for the big. But I also would mention we are very, very shallow at guard. We really only have three true backcourt players on our roster, so that would be another, to me, position to think about and having a viable backup there.
Yeah, no, definitely. And then as far as the media side, for y'all, for those of y'all who missed it, go back and listen to the pod. I loved y'all's conversation on this and the forward thinkingness of Grind City Media and all just kind of talking about that. But I just think I'm excited that we could potentially have some just hear some players. And I think just looking at how our players have done interviews, I think when they've gone on to podcasts or interviews with people either their own age or with other athletes, I feel like they've been more honest and vulnerable. And so I look forward to potentially hearing from the Grizzlies. And then the other thing, the only other thing that, and y'all mentioned this a little bit, it's just great having someone who's been in organizations like the Spurs and the Raptors and even, you know, in some sense, the Lakers, although they're they're kind of a cloud show right now, but just part of winning organizations. And he would say that he loves our organization and that he'd be willing to stay here longer than this year, I think says a lot about our culture and organization.
Hey, they weren't a clown show when Danny Green was there. So
they were not.
Maybe that's the common factor. Yeah. All right, I'll let you take this last news item here.
Yeah. So it's kind of a double news item, but on November 10th, Jenkins before a game came out and said that Jaren Jackson Jr. had been playing 5-on-5 with contact, but that the organization was taking baby steps to his return. And so it was kind of one of those exciting news and then bad news at the same time. I know for us, when we heard baby steps, I got very nervous and began to think Thanksgiving or a little after that. I was very nervous that they were kind of doing a slow play, trying to back everybody off, being excited about him coming back soon. But then 2 days later, November 12th, which is the time of our recording, Jaren Jackson has been listed as doubtful against the Wizards tomorrow, being upgraded. And while we're still trying to figure out, they've been doing some different things with questionable and doubtful. I do think that him being upgraded to doubtful basically means that he is coming back soon, that he will like go through the warmups probably even tomorrow. And that's very exciting. That tells me, and in my opinion, we can talk about this. I'm interested to hear your opinion. I mean, that tells me, I think he will definitely be back for the Thunder game Friday and maybe even the Pelicans game Tuesday.
Yeah, no, I had this might be the most exciting news item of the year so far. And it's about a guy who's being listed as doubtful. So that, I mean, that's how excited I am personally. And I know we are to have Jaren back. And yes, when I heard baby steps, I was thinking the worst. Like I was hoping it would even still be November. I mean, because when you hear that, you know what it implies. But I'm so excited, especially with our upcoming schedule. I think there's a lot of places where Jaren could be a definite mismatch, and we could see what our team looks like with a full starting lineup finally. And so, yeah, we'll get into maybe more of those matchup potential exploits. But I think that I would be surprised at this point not to see Jaren on the floor on Friday, if not sooner.
Yeah, and what an exciting thing about we're entering a portion of the schedule for the next 3 or 4 weeks where we don't have a back-to-back too. So it kind of makes it even more exciting because it seems like by the time we get to back-to-backs that hopefully Jaren will be back in the fold and not having to like sit out and things like that we usually do with people coming off injuries. So I think it's a really good time with a lot of days in between games coming up these next 2-3 weeks to bring them back too. So
yeah, that's a great point too, because we're not going to have the full Jaren Jackson Jr. experience when he gets back. I would imagine some level of ramp up. I will be so intrigued to see his foul rate per minute and see if he still manages to have that side of Jaren's game. But I'm more joking around when I say that. I'm going to be so excited for what he's going to bring. I hope that his conditioning will. I mean, there's nothing like gameplay to bring your conditioning up. And so let's go in with a certain level of expectation that isn't too high, and then go from there. I would encourage everyone, and I'm really saying that for myself.
Yeah, but one of the things, and I liked how it was interesting on the last podcast, y'all were talking about, Jaren and y'all were talking about how everybody was shooting threes well, and it was funny because there's an assumption that Santi's been shooting well, but he actually has not been shooting well, and he's been great for us. But just thinking about adding Jaren's, even not ramped up, just Jaren defensively, it'll probably be a while before he gets to kind of his peak, but just adding that. And honestly, even if Jaren shoots, poorly, like the 31% he did last year, that is still an improvement on Santi's outside shooting. And we all know that people don't treat him like a 31% free throw shooter. I mean, he's 3-point shooter. He's going to be spacing the floor, and it allows us to play all sorts of interesting lineups out there. And so it's super exciting just to have him back, to think about him playing in less than a week.
Yeah, he's a career 35% 3-point shooter, and Santi right now is shooting under 30. And so you automatically think about that five percentage point upgrade, especially, and this is a great segue, in a game like last night against Minnesota where you could see Jaren's shooting at a 35% clip actually have a profound effect on a game like that. So let's get into that game. We were both in the house, if I were to understand. Yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah.
Yes,
just wanted
we
to
were.
Confirm. Yeah, it was a blast. It was an 8:30 tip, so you knew that it was going to be a little bit more raucous than it usually was. I, for one, by about the third quarter, was getting a little tired, but I thought that that was due in part to the officiating, which they were calling a very tight whistle. We had both teams in the bonus in the first quarter. I would say it ended up playing more to the Grizzlies' advantage than the Wolves' advantage by the end of the game, yeah. But I had to mention that. I usually like a little bit more of a liberal whistle, and especially when in a team like the Grizzlies who thrive on flow. But the Grizzlies did take home the win against Minnesota, 114-103, their old playoff foe that has become somewhat of a rivalry. We can argue whether that will be in the future based on the domination. But John, what were your main takeaways from the game?
Yeah. So, well, first, just to comment on that, you know, it's also the first week of daylight savings time here.
Absolutely.
And so in reality, I did feel that as well. I mean, I thought the crowd was as hyped as it could be for the first for the first half. And I think even the players were. We were missing a lot of shots long, having some weird air balls. I think everybody was really hyped. But I also felt that third, fourth quarter, I thought the crowd started to get really tired, both because of the whistles and because our body clocks are still thinking it's super late. But it was super fun. It was a great environment. We'll talk about the Boston game. I thought the Boston game felt like a playoff game on the court, but I felt like this felt, brought me back to the playoff as far as how hyped the crowd was, how intense sort of the players were, how much energy they were bringing. It was really fun.
Yeah.
Fun night.
It was great. You want any basketball takeaways from you, John? What stuck out?
Yeah. So, it's funny. I feel like it's less about us and more about the T-Wolves, honestly. I just was shocked because we had great shot quality, but missed a lot of wide open shots. We missed a lot of free throws. We never really got in a rhythm because of the refs, I think. I would say we played kind of an okay game. We really stepped it up defensively in the second half, holding them to, I think, like 40, 41 points in the second half. Really played great defense. But the fact that we kind of beat the Timberwolves by double digits, not playing kind of our A game at all, was very surprising, especially how the playoff series went last year. And it just showed that, and maybe it'll work out for them against other teams, but everything that made them a hard matchup for us, I feel like they did a good job of changing to make them a great matchup for us. And that was my big takeaway, was that, and it is one game, and we'll see how we play when we play them in Minnesota. But the thing I took away is, like, they are no longer one of the teams that I'm kind of like, I don't know if I want to see them again in the playoffs. Because I just think having two bigs, that works with us. They got rid of all of their depth. I mean, our bench just killed them. It felt like whenever they had to take out Anthony Edwards, they had no kind of scoring. So anyway, those are just a few of my takeaways.
Yeah, I had the same thought because, I mean, you noticed how much more engaged Karl Anthony Towns was as soon as Rudy Gobert was off the floor and he could be the primary initiator. And then even more than that, I believe now more than ever that they should hand the keys over to Anthony Edwards. I thought not just the way that he's played in this game, but going back to the playoff series, I thought he is there, to me, has the best potential in this new style of game. I think we're starting to move a little bit more guard-centric. I know Simmons and them talked about it on his pod, but you're seeing a lot of backcourts pop up. And Anthony Edwards is bigger than just like a one or a two, but he plays a lot like one, and he can shoot so well. And I think that the style in which the Timberwolves have basically pushed all their chips into play has completely rendered parts of his game useless. And I thought you could see how much more space he had to operate when the bigs were in foul trouble. And the other thing I wanted to mention is, number one, The Grizzlies shot their lowest three-point percentage of the season. That's 21.2%, and they still won by double digits. You do not see that very often in the NBA. Usually, if you go look at final score and then you look at three-point percentage, those two things are going to correlate a lot of the time. And so I thought it was very intriguing that that was the case in our game. Also, Kyle Anderson, former Grizz, led the Timberwolves in usage last night. If Kyle Anderson is leading your offense and your team in usage, that means he is doing way too much on the offensive side of the ball. Carl Anthony Towns had his lowest minute total of the season as well. All those three things combined shows you how wacky of a game. Bryn Forbes, to me, I was most scared of Bryn Forbes than anybody other than Ant. I mean, it was crazy how this game played out.
He actually did what everybody wants him to do all the time, just come in and hit shots.
Exactly.
He's not been doing that as well, but he did it against us, so maybe we need to add him to the Grizz killer list because he was shooting out of his mind. But, I mean, it is interesting because, you know, and what's interesting is Anthony Edwards, I think, came out with energy. It was obvious he wanted to bring energy. It was a national TV game. We beat them last year. He has kind of a fun rivalry with Ja, because that's with a very engaged Anthony Edwards last night. I've been watching a lot of T-Wolves games, and he is rarely engaged, and so he kind of brought that engagement. But it is very obvious he does not like the trade. He is frustrated with the lack of space in the paint. The other thing is, you know, for us, is Ja has gotten now to where he just knows how to kill teams that play drop coverage on defense. And I think the T-Wolves were able to play a lot of five out and play a lot of interesting switch defenses. And with Gobert, you're going to play drop. And I just felt like it was just also another interesting, just thinking back 2 years ago to playing the Jazz in the playoffs, and how Ja kept trying to go right at Gobert and dunk on him. And whereas now it feels like he just goes in, and if Gobert is kind of backing off, he hits a little floater. Like, he just has complete control of the game and has no intimidation whatsoever of Gobert or kind of any hesitation of what to do. And that was great to see too.
Yeah. I mean, you look at our scoring, and we were in the 80th percentile so far this season of a percentage of points coming at the rim. And when you look at a team that has Rudy Gobert on it, you don't see it that often because of how elite he is in rim protection. And I feel like Ja, from that first Utah series where you saw, not Ja exploded a few games, but there were other times when Rudy really did shut the team down. And I think, like you were saying, like, you're seeing the fear factor with Ja completely go away. And I think it's so great to see that against this Timberwolves team, which is still so easy to hate, even though they've gotten rid of some of their depth pieces that made them very, very hateable. But
I know my son was very upset about not getting to boo Patrick Beverly.
Oh, I know. It's one of the fun things you can do. And now we get to do that with him on the Lakers, which is, I mean, still pretty sweet.
One other fun note that that game, like, kind of just being there and seeing it, was that, you know, we let them back in the game early third quarter. And what was interesting was Jenkins had one of those timeouts, those quick kind of pop timeouts where he gets mad, calls a timeout real quick. But it was really interesting to me because I think you could feel in the second half that Jenkins had gotten onto the team about not shooting enough and not shooting threes quick enough. And Bain kind of hesitated. He kind of pump faked when he could have shot it. And then he kind of drove in and turned the ball over. And you could tell it was interesting because you don't often see Jenkins like yell at Bain or Jaw or anybody like that. And he like yelled at Bain to shoot it. And it was very interesting to me because we put up a lot more threes. Unfortunately, we still weren't hitting them, but we definitely our guys were shooting them when they were open in the second half, and that's one of those things that in that game didn't necessarily pay off, but I think it helped our flow of our offense, but I think we'll pay off down the road, his just kind of continue desire to let it fly. So I thought that was an interesting little exchange there he had with Bay.
NBA fans, the NBA action is just getting started, and so are the incredible offers at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers can make any $5 NBA pregame moneyline bet and get $200 in free bets if your team wins. Check this out. Right now, everyone can earn up to a 100% boost with DraftKings stepped up same game parlays. Go to the DraftKings Sportsbook app, place a same game parlay and combine multiple bets like which team will win, total rebounds, total points scored, and more. With payouts bigger than ever, DraftKings Sportsbook is where the Grizz Den podcast goes to bet on the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code TBPN. Make any $5 bet this week and get $200 in free bets if your team wins. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with promo code TBPN. Yeah, a few more emptying the notebook things for me. Santi Aldama with one of the highlights of the year with his reverse alley-oop. I mean, he got up, and now Santi is about to be known by his signature reverse dunk. The lost art is back. I read a tweet.
He loves the reverse.
He does. I read it in his presser afterwards. Apparently, that started out as a joke, and then he realized steadily that it's harder to foul, or it's easier to get a foul drawn if you go in reverse because it confuses the defender. And so I think he hasn't necessarily had a foul drawn yet, but he's basically implying that a forward dunk is easier to block. And so people just get confused. Yeah. The other thing is I thought Dylan played really well. I think he paced us offensively in the first half, took a bunch of really good shots, and passed when he needed to. So he continues his good play there. I thought that.
Yeah, and go ahead. But, so top in net rating on the team.
Yes.
So just for, absolutely, just to throw it out there to our listeners. Yep. Since many of them don't like him.
Brandon Clark continues.
We win the best.
Oh yeah, for sure. Sorry to interrupt. We're remote.
No, you're fine.
If you can't tell, so there's going to be a little bit connection issue. But Brandon Clark continues to be the Timberwolves' kryptonite. I thought his energy off the bench was vital, and if I would absolutely be dreading seeing him if I were a Wolves fan, because apparently he has their number. Last thing is you're seeing some rookie moments from LaRavia and Roddy both. I mean, Roddy actually had he was 2 for 2, which is great. Didn't have a lot of run, but I thought LaRavia today you saw kind of how frustrating it can be when you're not hitting shots and you rely on that as your kind of target skill. But at the same time, it was one of those games you want them to run out and you want them to make mistakes and keep shooting.
Yep. No, definitely. And then, one other thing that was interesting on that Santi dunk, as far as a, you know, fun thing with the T-Wolves, is D'Angelo Russell was the one who just totally lost track of Santi on that back cut. And Finch just immediately took a timeout. Immediately pointed to the bench and got somebody in there. And D'Angelo actually sat on the bench for the final, like, 6-7 minutes of the game because he was so mad that he lost track of Santi on that dunk.
It was crazy. D'Angelo Russell scored one of the very first buckets of the game. Didn't score again until the very, like, last half of the fourth quarter. Total of 4 points. That's the D'Angelo Russell experience, folks. All right, so we talked a little bit on our podcast referencing the Celtics game. We glossed over a little bit the Spurs game, but in a few minutes, John, did you have any big takeaways from either of those games?
Yeah, so for me, one was it's one of those things. The Spurs just are always going to play well, even about their talent. It's one of especially at San Antonio, I just get excited when we get out of there with a W. I try not to get too upset, but I will say we got very lucky. They had two very makeable shots at the end of regulation to win it and at the end of the overtime to win it. And so, you know, when we talk about coin flip games, that was definitely a game that we won, but we very, very easily could have lost. And I think that the other thing is just that's one of those games to me that reminds me we're still a young team. It's hard. We won 56 games last year. We're doing already well again this year. We forget how young we are. And one of the things that game showed me the refs losing track of the clock and the clock not running, and then hilariously Brevin and Pete having to tell the refs that the clock didn't run.
All time
so
moment.
Funny. Yes, it was great. But one thing that kind of masked over, I think, and sort of just kind of the talk after the game was that we blew it. Like, we had a huge lead, and that we did not take care of the ball. And it's one of those things that I realized for us is we've sort of been in neck and neck back and forth games, and we've blown people out. We've not really had a lot of experience with the kind of we're up 5-6 points. We need to just make our free throws, take care of the ball. We haven't really had a lot of those games. And it does seem like, and even thinking back to last year's games, it does seem like we do have some trouble taking care of the ball, that we've often, when we need free throws to like tie the game, we're good at it. But it's when these like 4 or 5 point games where we just need free throws to get the game done that we sometimes miss. And so it'd be interesting to see. I'd like to see us improve on that. But that was just something. That was my kind of my big takeaway, was that we still don't know how to kind of win those sort of games.
Yeah, I actually, it's crazy you mentioned free throws. That was going to be my point in both the Boston and the San Antonio game. One thing when I was looking through, which we reference it a lot, but cleaning the glass is just great for taking some, basically matching what you're watching to what are the actual numbers behind that and presenting it in a great format. And here they have this stat in specific games where you can actually see free throw rate, which is the number of free throw, or excuse me, how many free throws did the team make per 100 field goal attempts? And in the Boston game, Memphis was in the second percentile in that, which is 8.8 per 100 field goal attempts. And a lot of that had to do with a lack of just getting to the line. Only three guys actually went to the line. Mm-hmm. Tatum, on the other hand, went to the line 16 times. He had 16 free throws, and only Bane, John, Dillon made their way. Dillon only once, and he was 1 for 2. Mm-hmm. In San Antonio, we were in the fifth percentile in free throw rate with a 10.2 per 100 field goal attempts. And so I think you're seeing some of that, which is, number one, we have to make them when we get there. Jaw gets there plenty. But then the other thing is, you know, with an increase in three-point volume, one of the things you do sacrifice is your advantage from the free throw line. Now, for a team like the Grizzlies, I think it's going to be really interesting to tease this out a little bit more, get a bigger sample size, and see what our, you know, free throw average should be, what to expect realistically. And then from there, adjusting our expectation on whether we need to have a team that attacks the rim more, or if we should prioritize, you know, these more three-point shots. And so that's definitely one thing to watch. But in the fourth quarter in a game that's going to come down to the wire, a team is going to be forced to make free throws if they were going to want to win. And I do agree with you. I thought we got out of there pretty lucky, and I'm glad we did.
Yeah, a couple other quick takeaways. Bane was great. I thought that was like a huge Bane game, and I think more and more – And kind of a big takeaway from the week that I might talk about when we get to Boston. I think more and more Jaw, who is hyping Bane up, great. But I think Jaw also, I think, needs to be okay with saying, I don't totally have it tonight, and I'm going to let Bane take over. And Bane really took over that game, especially when Jaw was sitting. But I thought Bane made huge shots for us down the stretch. And so I look at that game, and that was a big Bane game. And then one other thing that was sort of interesting to me about that was just that the Spurs are yet another team that showed, and this is why I'm excited about getting Jaren back, is that we struggle with the five out teams. The Mavs killed us, the Jazz killed us, and here's a Spurs team that doesn't have the talent of those two teams, but really, you know, put everybody out. And I know Poral's kind of like doing his sort of thing, but he kind of stands out by the free throw line. But we've struggled with teams when they've kind of gone all out on us. And so I'm excited about getting Jaren back, because I think he's going to be a huge help there. And so that's the other thing. Just the Spurs are kind of a weird matchup for us, the way they play.
Yeah, Sohan, too. He actually showed a bit more range than I gave him credit for in our last podcast. I thought I compared him to BC a little bit due to his energy, but his shot looks a bit better than BC's. Yeah. And so he's going to be
he looked great
to play and having him in our division. All right, quickly, any takeaways from Boston?
For me, the big thing was just, it's weird because I think we're too good, to say moral victory, but that's kind of what I felt about that game. There were some takeaways, but the fact that you don't have Steven Adams, you don't have Jaren, and you're playing, a team that is the number one offense in the NBA, and I think played them very well. And really, honestly, had to throw the rookies in a lot of tough situations. And they're a team that's going to take advantage of everything you do. And, you know, I felt bad for Santi. I heard y'all talk on the pod about this was kind of like a Santi moment where he got overwhelmed. And I think they came out, you know, and it was one of those weird, we came out and matched him up with Marcus Smart, and that did not go well. Marcus, like, torched him early. And you know, and again, I just said it, one of those five out teams, you know, that we struggle with when I'm really excited about getting Jaron back, who kind of can play, can be a five in defending a team like that. But that was, you know, but besides that, I thought this was the first real, man, it felt like a playoff game as far as how hard everybody was playing on the court, putting it all out there, how much everybody wanted to win. You know, and then and kind of with that, that was sort of my takeaway, was that I thought Ja kind of got caught up in Ja versus Tatum a little bit and MVP stuff. And I thought he probably should have looked to, you know, basically look to get Tatum off of him with a pick and roll or passed it to Bane or Dylan. And instead, he tried to drive on him and got blocked a couple times. And so it was one of those games where, you know, we actually we rarely see, but they might have had the best player on the floor, at least that game. I think a lot of people, you know, we could talk about whether they're just, you know, I would still rather have Ja than Tatum. But Tatum, I think, was the best player on the floor that game, at least.
Yeah, what stuck out to me really was that he was forcing a lot of threes, and I think part of that was we were coming from behind near the end, and it actually ended up working. There was, yeah. I will say, the fact that it was a one possession game at the end was a little crazy. Add another another filing to Slipgate. Our players slipping at the end of games. Yes. I don't know what's going on, but Ja or Bane, whenever it's kind of a late game situation, I don't know if we just need to mop exactly where they're going to be just to make sure, or whether we need to change shoes here. Maybe we need the Nike Morants will help, but that's one thing. So. Just file that under Slipgate, and we're going to keep track of that this year. That was another example.
Yeah, and I forgot. And I forgot to say, I mean, we were on a back-to-back too. So, I mean, that's another thing that for the moral victory, I totally forgot that, you know, that was a back-to-back that we were on. So I think that might have also added to why Ja took a lot of threes trying to conserve some energy.
Yeah, 100%. All right, we're going to get to previewing the Wizards, Pelicans, and Thunder games this week. But before we get to that, we are going to return to the game that continues to sweep the nation. It is. Guess who? Kraft, you are asking me this week, and I'm praying I do better than last time.
So, yeah, so I'm cheating a little bit, so I apologize, because I'm going to ask you for two names and not just one. But I'll try to give you hints if it's hard. But so as one of the things we noted last year that was so amazing was Ja Morant led the league in points in the paint. And he's seventh right now, by the way, average points in the paint. Giannis is number one by a lot. Giannis is dominating the paint. So this week we are playing the second and the third players of points in the paint. So it's two different teams. I'll let you know that. But we are playing the second and the third players with points in the paint. Do you know who those two players are?
I think I'm pretty confident about one of them, and I have an educated guess about the second. The first, is one of them Shai Gilgeous-Alexander?
Yes. So he is third place. So that's... Yes, so that's very good. Then, so he's the one I thought you would struggle with. So,
no, it was funny because in my prep for this podcast, I was one of the things that stuck out, and we'll get there in a second, was actually how many threes he's not taking. I thought he would be taking more threes.
Yeah,
he's scoring a ton. So you put two and two together. Is the other one Jonas Valanciunas?
No, it's not.
Is it Zion?
The right team. It is Zion. He's already second in points in the paint.
That's points nuts. Per game, okay, so. I knew it was Zion or Jonas, and I was going to take a little bit more of like the non-mainstream answer because I know Jonas, how much he loves scoring in the paint, even though they want to tout him as a three-point shooter. But that's impressive. So Shai and Zion are both top three in points in the
second
paint?
Second and third. Yep.
Wow. Okay. Well, there we go. I'll take one out of two. All right. Well, let's get to previewing these matchups. The Wizards we've seen once before. We're playing them in an identical time slot on an identical day within 1 week. And so we're playing them Sunday night, 5 p.m. The Wizards are 7-6, which is good for fifth in the East. They have not had Bradley Beal in the last week. Right. And we'll see. He's listed as day-to-day. And so we're not sure whether or not he's going to end up playing tomorrow night. Here's to hoping he does not. But they're 24th in offense, 20th in defense, and 23rd in net rating. So, John, what are you looking ahead to against the Wizards?
Well, so, I mean, I think the big thing is going to be is Beal back. And is do they play? Kristaps has been out for a couple games with a bad groin. He played tonight, but the you know, it'll be interesting to see if he plays on a back-to-back. So that's one big thing for me, is that this is one of our first times we're actually getting a schedule win game. So they played tonight, played the Jazz, which is a team that tires you out because they make you run everywhere because they pass the ball really well. So it'll be interesting to see how they come out tomorrow with that. And so part of it's going to be interesting because, you know, it's going to be the Kyle Kuzma show. He's going to be putting up a ton of shots if Kristaps and Beal are not there. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens. The other big storyline is that as excited as we all were to have Jaren Jackson listed as doubtful, that Ja and Bane are also listed as doubtful with a toe and Ja with an ankle, which if you watched the game yesterday, he tweaked it a little bit, and he's honestly tweaked it a couple times, I think, in the last few days. So I don't know. So my feeling is for both of them, this is kind of just a rest game potentially. So I see them as both out, but we'll see, because neither of them were listed as questionable, but it seems like it's kind of a rest game for them. But to me, that's obviously a big deal. If we don't have, you know, not having our top three players, it's going to be hard to win a game, even against a Wizard team without their top two players.
Yeah, you're placing over 60 minutes, and you are, you're in a spot where I am actually a little worried about the jaw injury. I think that he has, like you said, had a couple of these where I just watch him, like, it looks like he has a moment of, like, you know, hopping over to the, it looks like, to the bench, but then Jenkins doesn't seem phased, leaves him out there. So this must happen even more than we can see, like, hopefully not too much, but maybe in practice.
Right.
And then within like a couple minutes, Ja seems to be fine and is running. And especially when we make a stop and they give him the ball, it's just like immediately back to normal. Bane, yeah. I don't know. I thought that was a little funny that it was a toe, based on the pre-existing injuries that Bane's already had. Like, I feel like you could easily get away with putting one of those if this is more of a scheduled rest game. But yeah, I'm totally interested to see, of course, number one, Jaren, if he comes back. He's listed as doubtful. I doubt he will. But then also, we're going to get to see more of our rookies. We're going to get to see Tyus is going to get a chance to start, which means that Kennedy Chandler may get some run. Because Bane, I mean, if Bane isn't there either, you don't have a guy who has been, you know, a secondary ball handler at times and a backup point guard in a few instances. And so you're going to see Chandler. You're going to see a lot more Laravia and Roddy, you would think, just to fill in the gaps on minutes. And it's going to be a really entertaining game, I hope. And last time we had a pretty big, we were down at first, got a big lead, let them, you know, come back into it, which part of that probably had to do with the timing of the game and also just taking our foot off the gas. But you're going to be, like I said, replacing over 60 minutes of Ja and Dez potentially. And, you know, both of them are averaging high 20s, you know, low 30s. So we'll see what happens.
And I understand, you know, and I think it's a good place to get a rest game. We're coming off a very emotional game. The Pelicans and the Thunder are both Western Conference teams coming up. And that Pelicans game is actually a pretty big game as far as just seeding and other things like that. And we've already played the Wizards once and beaten them. So I can see kind of, you know, taking a schedule loss here. But I hope we come out and play well. One reason, just as a side note, one interesting aspect is if we do win tomorrow, there's a very, very good chance because the Utah Jazz, who are the first in the Western Conference right now, the Utah Jazz are playing at the 76ers. 76ers are very good at home, obviously way more talented than the Jazz. And also the 76ers, I believe, have already lost to them. So I think the 76ers are going to come out strong. So there's a good chance if we win tomorrow that we might be number one in the standings when we wake up Monday morning. So, which would be pretty cool, thinking about all the injuries and everything we've had. So in some ways, I'm hoping if we end up resting John and Dez, that they get healthy and that our bench comes out and does what it did last year and win a game we're not expecting.
Absolutely. Well, the next game we're going to be playing is on Tuesday night. That is in New Orleans. It's 6:30 game, by the way. So don't assume 7 Central. It is a 6:30 game. So tune in early that night, and we're going to see a a Western Conference opponent that we haven't had a lot of success with in past years in a matchup standpoint, and yet we always seem to find ourselves ahead of them in the standings. The Mavericks and the Pelicans are both like this. Right now, the Pelicans are sitting at 6-6. That's good for 8th in the Western Conference. They are 9th in offense and 15th in defense, with so a 10th 10th in net rating, which if you look at, I mean, the Pelicans and the Grizzlies, ironically enough, have been really, really next to each other the whole season in this net rating stat. And they're actually a few spots ahead of us as of right now with a worse record. And yeah, what are you looking forward to in this Pelicans game?
Man, it's one of those. I mean, this was one of the ones that I expected to lose. And so it'll be interesting coming off potentially a loss because of resting guys. If that happens, what kind of energy we're going to bring to this game. I know it's a big rival game. At some point, I think Ja has to hate the fact that he always loses to Zion whenever they play against each other. It'll also be it'll be a TNT game, so a big nationally televised game as well, so which is why the 6:30 start time. So I'm looking forward to it. I mean, as I've made fun of the Pelicans, I think they have one good defensive player who starts for them, and Herb Jones, and the other four are very poor defensively. And it's an interesting thing. And one thing that I noticed, I watched the game tonight where, again, they just messed around with the Rockets but didn't get caught. And they've been messing around with a lot of teams and getting caught. What's weird is when all their guys are healthy and playing, they look sort of meh. But they have that bench of, like, Larry Nance, what's his name, the short guy?
Jose.
Who steals the ball. Yeah, Jose. Like all those guys, and they play really well. And in fact, those two guys ended the game tonight. They were down by, eight points to the Houston Rockets late, and then made like a 22-2 run with Larry Nance and Jose in the game. And so it's interesting because I feel like the bench players know their role and play them well. And so it's one of those weird things where we might play well with their stars, but I'm very nervous when their bench comes in, the kind of energy they bring, especially at home. I'll be interested to see if our bench can match their bench and kind of how they play and their energy. Because I think that's what makes the Pelicans really tough, is they're also a pretty deep team as well.
Yeah, one thing that I noticed in doing a little bit of research on this team is that they are ranked third in the shots attempted at the rim, and they're ranked 30th in the league in shots attempted from three. And so I think you are seeing that was an appropriate stat in your guess who about points in the paint, because this team is basically the poster child for that. The other two teams ahead of them are the Lakers and the Charlotte Hornets, and I think a lot of that is less to do with a strategy and more to do with their complete lack of shooting around.
Yes.
At least New Orleans has a few guys who you're worried about if they pull it from behind the arc, but I think you're seeing the Zion effect already this year. You're seeing the bet that they made with Jonas Valanciunas as well as their center, and I think it's going to be really interesting because Jaren, if he's back, that's a big deal. Protecting the rim, and Steve-O has been doing a fine job, and he's a big body in there. But you're gonna need somebody who can be a little bit more versatile and can protect it, especially with guys like Zion who typically play above the rim and below it. And so that's one thing I'm gonna be watching. And they have a very average their field goal percentage is average, which that's if you're shooting most of your shots at the rim, you want it to be above average from a field goal percentage standpoint. So it's definitely going to be something to watch there. And we always seem, again, to play our worst game of the season, but maybe with this schedule loss or schedule rest, I should say, I don't want to assume a loss against the Wizards. Yeah. We'll see a team that's fresh, ready to go, and potentially has their lead rim protector back.
Yeah. I mean, at this point we have to not, I mean, we go down to New Orleans and get killed. And I feel like our team should have some pride at this point of not wanting that to happen yet again early in the season, go down there and get killed. And so people always say we have this curse that we keep losing the Mavs, the Pelicans, but we keep finishing ahead of them in the standings. I'd rather finish ahead of them in the standings, but I'm getting tired of losing to these two teams. So and it's weird, too, because I think both the Mavs and the Pelicans, like, you watch them play other teams and they look so mediocre. It's, like, so frustrating. Like, the Mavs, have lost some – both of them have lost to just some terrible teams. And it's just very strange that for some reason they play us so well. So
yeah. John, I just did a little bit of investigative work, and I have some findings to report. And this has to do with our game at home against the Oklahoma City Thunder on Friday night. And that is, by the way, did you happen to get to the Minnesota game early enough to get a trucker hat?
I did not, no.
Okay, well, they were
no. I'm very unfortunate.
It was a great item of the game, a great giveaway. I was glad they did it because I'll probably be wearing that out in on a daily basis. But I looked at the promotional schedule because I remembered in the back of my head, I knew there was something that they were giving out this Friday night. What do you know? It is the Jaren Jackson Jr. Black Panther socks. Do you think there is an organizational strategy to bringing back Jaren Jackson Jr. on the night in which they are giving away his themed socks, his item of the game that is, you know, based on his defensive prowess? It's also interesting, you know, the movie's being released as well, so there's one argument to make. Yes, I guess you could say that's one counter.
That's true.
But I got to think, I'm just saying, the timing is a little uncanny.
It makes me upset that when we were predicting when he came back, we didn't think about this.
Same. And that's on me. That's on me, honestly. But yeah, we'll see. That could be really fun.
That does make that. It's funny. That does, you know, that maybe makes me wonder if the chances of him coming back Tuesday are probably pretty slim, because I think that would be like a fun. I could see the organization seeing.
And
that,
it's a Friday home game. You know, I don't know.
That synergy.
We'll
there.
We'll see. Yeah. All right. What do you think about OKC? Have you seen much of them this season so far?
I've watched a little bit of them. I haven't seen them as much as some of the other teams, just because unlike, you know, the Blazers and the Jazz, I just think Sam Presti is like for sure going to make sure they tank. He's going to for sure shut SGA down, which, you know, frustrates me because I think they're a really fun team when they I like Giddey, you know, I like SGA. You know, there's actually a news report this week of SGA starting to complain about the losing.
What do you know?
And yes, so it'll be interesting to see. But I mean, what, again, I put the Thunder because as I talk about the Pelicans being like a hype team that does not like the Mavs, like other teams that have not, you know, like the Warriors. Maybe we can talk about them in a second. That have not lived up to the hype so far, have kind of lost some teams that are surprising. The Thunder are in this camp with the Jazz, with the Blazers, and even honestly with the Spurs, of playing sort of above what people expected, coming out and beating a lot of teams. They beat the Clippers twice in a row. So all that to say, they're like the Spurs. We have to come out and take care of business Friday night. Like, if we come out and mess around, it will be a close game, and they will execute well, and SGA is a great closer. And like, he's a really winning player, especially in close games. And so I'd be nervous. You know, Dort's going to get in there and play really good defense on Jaw. I think probably be very physical with John Bain, whoever he decides to guard. So they're a good team that will, you know, maybe surprise people. This is not going to be walk in and win by 76 points like we did last year. That is not this Thunder team. They're a legitimate NBA team, and so in that sense, you know, we need to take them seriously. I also think after having 2 days of rest and coming in and being home and Jaren having his first home game, most likely, I do expect to win this game. Like, this should be a professional win for sure.
Yeah. A few things. I was really excited preseason for this game because I think Chet Holmgren is somebody that I personally wanted to see in person, because he's just, I mean, his physicality is really interesting. The way he plays is also very effective despite his physical profile. And also, I think he and Jaren are kind of comps for each other. I think the Thunder are probably looking at Jaren as somebody for him to watch, just the way that Jaren plays defense, but also the way he gets to his spots behind the three-point line in particular. So I'm bummed because Chet is actually out for the season, which is playing into some of the tanking potential there. Right. I also am very high on Jalen Williams. This is who I wanted the Grizzlies to target in the draft, but Jalen went, of course, way earlier than he was necessarily projected to, and he had this weird elbow to the face like in his very first game, which left him out. And so he's not getting a ton of buzz right now, but he's a guy who's actually in the 70th percentile in total points scored per 100 shot attempts. And he isn't, in my opinion, getting enough usage and enough minutes so far, but he's a guy to watch. Like he's this prototypical wing that can potentially grow into a very gifted offensive player, like 3-and-D on steroids. And so that's one guy that you're going to love to watch.
Yeah, I think if he had the usage of Mathurin, I think that he could have potentially kind of have that. I don't know if he'd be as good as Mathurin is right now, but I think he would have that kind of buzz of, oh, this is a really good rookie, you know, if he kind of had the opportunities that Mathurin's had at Indiana, for sure.
Yeah.
So he's a fun person to watch.
For sure. Well, I personally think that 2-1 at the end of this week will be a success based on who's resting tomorrow night, based on just the Pelicans in general, and then based on the professional win that we should have against the Thunder. But we will be definitely back with you to review those. Before we get out of here, John, you referenced it a second ago. What are your thoughts on the Warriors so far? And then quickly, anything else that you'd like to Conference?
I just wanted to, you got a Warriors comment at the end of the pod, last pod, and I just wanted to say amen to that. I think it's the story with all the drama going on with like the Lakers, how bad they are with the Nets, that there's been this underreported story out there, which is that the Warriors are a very mediocre team. They have a great top five, and I think even Jordan Poole, when he plays with the starters, is good. But outside of that, their team is very bad. And it really reminds me of the Lakers after the bubble championship, when they got rid of a lot of their vets and they kind of had this weird season, and everybody kept waiting for them to turn it on, but they kept having this sort of mediocre season. And I'm starting to think that that's the Warriors this year. I mean, their last two wins, Steph went crazy.
That's the point I was going to
make.
Like
over 40 points. Yes, twice, and both of them have come with extreme controversy. Klay very obviously fouled at the end of the Kings game. It was a very obvious foul that in the two-minute report that everybody was saying. He fouled him twice, really, a three-point shooter that could have tied it or would have cut three free throws. And then last night, up one, Klay had the worst moving screen of all time that again was reported in the two-minute report that got Steph open for a three. I mean, it was so bad. And so there's been – so they could be even worse than they are right now. And I think they're 5-7, right, or 6-7? What are they?
5-7 now.
And so 5-7. I mean, they could easily be 3-9. And I don't – and I just think people aren't talking about it enough, that it's taking an unbelievable – that Steph is great, but it's very obvious that the rest of that kind of starting group has declined a little bit and that their bench has just fallen off a cliff without the vets. And so I just think that's a big story to watch. And for me, I'm starting to get worried because I made a prediction about us being 1-2 with the Warriors for Christmas Day. And I'm starting to worry that we're going to come in like we're going to be the team with the good record. And they're going to be this like, you know, 50-50 team sort of win-loss record. And, you know, and people will still be hyping it up. But anyway, it if I were a Warriors fan, I would be very, very concerned.
Yep. Klay Thompson and Draymond Green combined for 11 points against the Cavs. Both played 30 minutes or over. That's been the story to me. I mean, they're a Steph Curry sprained ankle away from being at the bottom of the league in a lot of categories, and I'm worried.
And you're supposed to wait till next year when we have your draft pick.
Absolutely. That's the subplot that we need to start talking about right now. Blow it up, Golden State. Blow it up. One last thing. Last thing. I forgot to mention this in the Minnesota. Yeah. Karl-Anthony Towns to the New York Knicks in return for RJ Barrett, Evan Fournier, and a bunch of draft picks. You heard it here first, Minnesota. That's your key to getting out of this hell. I honestly regret even saying it because I don't want to give them any good ideas to make their team better. I enjoy this version of the Minnesota Timberwolves. John, any parting shots here before we wrap it up?
No, just excited. You know, for all the craziness of these first few weeks, we're on the brink of first place in the Western Conference, and we're about to get our Defensive Player of the Year back. And so that's super exciting.
Let's hope Jaren is back. I prefer it's before Black Panther Sox night, but if it's Black Panther Sox night, that'll be a blast. All right, this has been another edition of the Weekend Update. For John, I'm Will. Thanks for joining us. We will talk to you next weekend.